Welcome to A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. I'm Mike Papali, and I'm the president and founder of In a Heartbeat, a nonprofit organization with a mission to prevent death from sudden cardiac arrest. I went into sudden cardiac arrest at age 17 and have been living with heart disease for over a decade. This podcast will dissect the physical and emotional obstacles of living with heart disease and how to overcome them. I am inviting you to join me on my personal journey of living as a heart disease patient. The ultimate goal of this podcast is to help heart disease patients of all ages live a long and normal life. Welcome back to another episode of A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. This episode, we have another great guest, Tamar Kevorkian. And Tamar is going to share her inspiring story about how she was diagnosed with a very rare heart disease when she was a baby and how it's affected her life and all the amazing work she is doing now. So here she is, Tamar Kevorkian. All right, we now welcome on a very special guest, Tamar Kevorkian. Tamar, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you, Mike, for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk about your story. It's very interesting and inspiring. So I'm excited to hear kind of, yeah, your life journey and kind of everything that you're doing now. So I'm going to kind of start in the beginning. And, you know, you were diagnosed with heart disease, a rare heart disease at a really young age. So if you could just do a couple things, explain what the heart disease is and how they diagnosed it at such a young age for you.
So I was about 16 months old when I was first diagnosed. I was born in 1990. So about, I guess I would say a year and a half I was when they first found the initial diagnosis. And how that happened from how my parents explained to me was I was just turning blue, like fingernails were turning blue, lips were turning blue, which is a sign of not getting enough oxygen. And then my growth at some point, my growth stunted, like I stopped growing as a baby. And then they took me to multiple doctors. And from what I remember, I think it took a few doctors until someone was finally able to give me a proper diagnosis. His name is Dr. Hillel Lacks. He's actually very well known. A lot of people have known who he is when I talked about him. So he caught that diagnosis and he's the first one who performed my surgery. And the diagnosis is called Schoen's complex. Mm-hmm. It's very rare. Schoen's complex affects the left side of our heart and it comes in various forms. For me specifically, it was the mitral and aortic valve. We have four valves, so two of mine weren't pumping. They were very narrow. The blood wasn't flowing through, so I needed to replace those with mechanical valves. Mm-hmm. And once I got the mechanical valves, he also realized I need a pacemaker because I had a partial heart block. Mm-hmm. Which, again, I needed help with my heart pacing a little bit because it was able to beat, but sometimes it would stop. Mm-hmm. So I have got this pacemaker that's located up here and connected to the heart. So that also helps my heart beat regularly. And that was my first surgery, I would say. And if it was I was a year and a half, I want to say that was 92.
Wow. Okay. So you had a pacemaker put in when you were basically a year and a half old.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm sure like those memories are a little like blurry for you because you were so young, but that must have obviously been a very scary time for your parents. But do you remember like growing up, like even being like, you know, when you first kind of start having real memory, like, you know, 5 or 6 years old, you know, did your parents have to like limit the things that you were doing or did you have like a pretty normal childhood?
I think I had a pretty normal childhood. I went to school regularly, like everyone else. I joined swimming classes. I was in ballet and tap. I think the only, I would say, limitation was that maybe I would get tired more quickly than others, but nothing to the extreme level that I couldn't catch my breath or passed out. It was just more or less, I lived a normal childhood from what I can say.
That's awesome. And I know like, you know, when you have a mechanical valve placed, it doesn't last forever. So, you know, how often were you, you know, going back in to have these valves replaced?
So I've had my valves replaced, I want to say five or six times, I think. Yes. At this point, it's been 6 times. My first one was when I was like a year and a half old. And then that one was in 92. So everything wasn't as advanced as it is now. So I think that one lasted me about 8 years. So I had to have another replacement around 7 or 8, 9, like around then. And then I had another replacement when I was a teenager. And then the last two, which were the most extreme ones, was when I was 24, and then 2022 when I was turning 30.
Yeah, so is it kind of like in line like with getting the battery of like your pacemaker replaced too, or is it kind of like happen around the same time, or because that's about the
No.
no? Okay.
So pacemakers were separate, and pacemakers aren't considered open heart surgery because it's right here and it's not even that big of a thing. They just make a small incision and it takes about an hour, so it's not really as a big of a issue. And it lot this one that I got, I think I have 8 or 9 more years on it, and then they would just do a small little procedure and change the battery.
Right. So when you're having a valve replaced, you're having a full open heart surgery.
Yeah, because they literally crack open the chest, all the tissues, everything. They just, I think it was like a 12 or 13 hour surgery.
Wow. What's like from those surgeries? What are the like the recoveries like? Are they challenging recoveries? Are you kind of like home for
About
a bit or?
I was home this last one, 2020, which is the one I posted about the most on my page. That one, I went into heart failure, and it was around right in the time when COVID happened, so it was a very scary time. And it was right when things were still a little confusing. And I had a swelling in my feet and my legs, in my hands. For some reason, it didn't cross my mind it could be my heart. It was very weird. Kind of like, I don't know if I push it away or I'm like, no, just stress, it's something else. But then I got to the point that I went to the ER February 2020, and then they told me my body is retaining fluid because I'm in heart failure. And I got admitted immediately to UCLA. And maybe 2 or 3 weeks after, maybe not like a week after, UCLA shut down. So no visitors, nothing. And I was there for about 2 months, a little over 2 months. I got admitted in February, left in April. I
Wow.
was in heart failure. And then usually one organ affects the other. So my heart was just not pumping enough blood. I wasn't getting enough oxygen, and then it went to my kidneys. So then I was in kidney failure.
Oh my gosh. And 2 months, I can't even, yeah, because that's February to April. That's like right in the thick of when COVID was so you basically, I mean, can you just talk about that? Like being, I mean, in the hospital, which, you know, you obviously had all these physical things going on that, you know, doctors were working on, but also there's like the, you know, mental side of it where, you know, like I've spent some time in the hospital, but I've always been in the hospital when people could come visit me, which has helped pass the time. What was that like? 2 months of a lot of bad news, right? As other things were happening and not really having the comfort of a ton of like family and friends to be there with you.
Right. I think I only had people like friends, family visiting maybe the first 2 weeks. But again, even then, it was like with restrictions, with masks, it wasn't like normal either. Time that, because I had to wait till my kidneys recovered to have my heart surgery, because it's so weak that they said we can't perform surgery on you because, first of all, you're 77 pounds. I dropped all this weight. I was intubated and all that stuff. And then they said, well, your kidneys are failing. If we do surgery on your heart, like that's all the medication and anesthesia is gonna go to your kidney. It just doesn't go well together. So I the day that I was on temporary dialysis and my kidneys miraculously recovered 100%, and it was that exact day that my kidneys finally recovered, and the doctor said, okay, you're good now. We're gonna do your surgery. And that's the day that UCLA said, we're gonna shut down, no more visitors. So it was like perfect timing. And you know, the time I needed it the most, no one could come in anymore. And it was just FaceTiming, it was phone calls, and it was like my mom or like whoever, like you know, my dad, my uncle, anyone just giving the nurse something to bring up to me. Like my mom would go get food and like call the nurse down to go get the food to come. It was just very confusing and indirect, almost like we were doing things in secret because we couldn't actually see each other.
And on top of like all this, like I'm thinking about this, on top of all this, this was you know, at the time where we didn't really know anything about COVID, right? And the only thing we were hearing in the beginning was that if you have a heart disease, if you have other diseases that could potentially affect your breathing, that you could be in, you know, real danger if you get COVID. So was that also like another thing that was going on? Like, obviously, you're, you know, you have all these other issues that the doctors are working on, but on top of that, you're also scared of getting COVID-19.
You know, it's really weird because they were testing me daily since the day I got there, like whenever we discovered what it is, till the day I got discharged. And even through all that, being fragile with the failure and the kidneys, I never once got COVID when I was in there.
Wow.
Which is just kind of blows my mind because I have all this other stuff that are so life-threatening. And, you know, my immune system obviously was very weak and I didn't catch it.
Wow. That is, it's so, because I know at that time too, it was like the one place you don't want to be right now is a hospital because everything was so crazy.
Exactly.
So you ended up having the surgery and same thing. What was the recovery from the surgery like?
Well, after I had the surgery, finally, I still had to stay there for, I think, another week or another week and a half. So by that time, it was like April, like around Easter time, maybe April 14, 15, around then. Mm-hmm. And then recovery was about 6 months, like full recovery.
And did you have to spent that at home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But I was have to go home, and then I was able to get on my feet because obviously I had been so bedbound for 2 months that I was too weak to walk. So I had like physical therapy and I had a home nurse who would come see me. So that period of time maybe was 2 months, and then I gained my strength to, you know, stand up to walk again. But everything else, like driving a car or really like going out, and I was still in nursing school at that time, so going to school, that took about 6 months.
Yeah. Okay. So this was obviously like a, you know, a serious, you know, near-death experience that you had. And, you know, I kind of want to go backwards a little bit because, you know, you had another serious incident in 2014. And can you just talk about that? Like the doctors caught a blood clot?
Yeah. So in 2014, I was 24, and it was again very traumatic, not as traumatic as this last one, but again it was something very random that I wasn't expecting. So I had gotten short of breath for the past few months, but I was in my undergrad university studying something else for my bachelor's around then, and I thought it was stress. I thought I was tired, or again, for some reason, like now I know, like if I catch any to go to my heart first, but even then I didn't think anything of it. And it just happened to be my annual visit to my cardiologist around that time, and we did like an echocardiogram, like checked my heart, usual stuff. And I remember still him coming in, and he already had like a concerned look on his face. And he asked me, he's like, how are you feeling? And I'm like, I'm okay, I'm fine. And he's like, no, like, actually, how are you feeling? And then I was like, oh, well, I guess I've been feeling a little fatigued, a little your breath. He's like, yeah, well, you have a blood clot in your valves. And that was just like, I didn't know what to think of it. It was very scary. And he said, we need to do a surgery today, either today or tomorrow, like next few days. And I almost laughed because I thought he was joking. And I was so focused on school. I'm like, no, what do you mean? I have finals. I have to go back to school. I have all these exams. He's like, well, and he literally told me, he's like, well, if we don't do the surgery ASAP, you're not going to be able to take those finals. Basically saying it's going to kill me. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm dropping out for a while. And he sent me straight to the ER. An ambulance actually came to his office and got me.
Oh my God.
Even though it was like next door, he's like, you're not walking, you're not driving yourself. Wow. And then he called an ambulance. They took me literally like around the corner, took me to the UCLA's hospital and admitted immediately. And I think I had the surgery a day or two later because they had to like monitor me and do all this prep stuff before. Recovery, and again, I think I was in the hospital for about a month just because they wanted to make sure I was okay and no clots were there and I was stable. I want to say three to 4 weeks I was there. Wow. And again, recovery took about 6 months. Mm-hmm. I was out of school about 6 months. And that, I always say, it was kind of my fault because I wasn't very careful with my medication, mm-hmm. my anticoagulation. So if you're taking anticoagulations, never, ever skip it. And I think stress may have had something to do with it, because I think that's what led me to forget about my meds and not mm-hmm. take it. And that's what caused the clot.
Yeah.
So it didn't just happen by itself.
Yeah. So you went from, you know, the stress, which, you know, when you're in the moment, final exams are very stressful, you know, for all of us. We've all been there that have gone through that. But you went from that stress to like a sitting across from a doctor and a doctor telling you, like, you know, basically, like, if we don't fix this now, you could possibly die. But also, if, like, if you didn't have this appointment, there's a chance that this could have killed you. Like,
yeah.
You know, what's that feeling like of, like, again, going from you think you're, you know, stressed out about taking, like, a, you know, a math final to all of a sudden you're stressed out about, like, you know, is this going to kill me? Like, could I die from this?
I think I learned from both those experiences to not stress about mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot of things, like not to care about such unimportant things, school or even like anything that seems like a minor inconvenience. Worst things can happen.
Yeah.
That's what these experiences taught me. Like, so you know, you fail a class, whatever, take it over again, you know, you... Mm-hmm. Don't get along with someone, it's fine, whatever. Like, all these stuff that are so irrelevant that cause stress after you almost die, like, they don't matter anymore.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so I just kind of want to talk, I know we kind of touched on, like, growing up a little bit, but I'm just curious, like, you know, you're a young professional now, young adult, in your, you know, 20s, how is heart disease, has it affected your life, other than, like, the surgeries and having the recoveries from those, like, what have the challenges been, both physically and emotionally, of just kind of like living with this condition, growing up with it?
I think the most challenging part at this point is just fear a little bit, mm-hmm. that, like, I don't want the same thing to happen again. I'm definitely mm-hmm. more careful mm-hmm. with my health. I always took care of myself, but I think now it's even more to another level. Like, I make sure to take my medications. I eat well, I exercise, I give myself rest when I need it. Mm-hmm. So just besides that, besides being extra careful, I don't think emotionally it's something I think about in a negative way a lot. Mm-hmm. I think just actually, if anything, has helped me think more positively about life.
Yeah, I think it's just really important just to talk about like that, even saying that what you just said, though, because I think a lot of times, like, people associate like being diagnosed with a heart disease with like their life being like over and them not being able to do a lot of the things they like love to do. And that's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. Of course, there could be some limitations. And I think it's really important, though. I think the point you made of being like mindful of like when you need rest and when you need, you know, when you feel a certain way, right? Even being aware of some of those symptoms, that's like really important and impactful for people to like understand, especially with people for heart disease. So I think naturally we're always like, we want to think it's something else, right? Mm-hmm. We want to think like, no, this doesn't have to do with my heart. And it's just really important to be honest with yourself about those symptoms. Like, and I think that's one of the things you said you learned, which is great. All of these experiences you've had now have inspired you to, you know, do what you're doing with your career. So can you kind of talk about what you do and the journey that has gotten you to do that?
So I went into nursing school around 2019, because I originally had the idea after my 2014 experience of, you know, mm-hmm. the clot, but I was already in my undergrad program. I was about to graduate with a different degree. So I told myself, obviously, let me finish this. I have like a year left or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I'm definitely going to go into nursing. Mm-hmm. And I think I worked for a few years as a teacher, because that's what my I was a child development major. I worked in a school, like an elementary preschool, and I liked it. It was fun, but I always wanted to do more. That just wasn't fulfilling enough for me. And I went to a counselor, my school counselor, before I graduated from my undergrad. And I told her about this plan. I'm like, you know, I want to get this bachelor's degree, but I want to come back and possibly do nursing because the school I went to had a nursing program. And she kind of looked at me funny and she's like, your grades aren't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she told me. I'm like, yeah, but this is a different major. She's like, and she just had every excuse in the book to be discouraging about it. And she's like, well, you know, you need science and you need this and that and you don't have any of that. And I was very discouraged for a while. I didn't really tell many people about it just because the idea kind of just left me after she was so discouraging. And I forgot about it for like 4 or 5 years. And then something one day just like, I don't know what it was, told me, you know what? No, like, why am I letting someone who's not even in my life discourage me? I want to try to take these classes, apply. And if I don't get in, I don't get in, you know? But mm-hmm. if I don't try, I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I did all of that and I got into nursing school. And I did have to drop out because I was in the middle of my program when the whole 2020 thing happened. Mm-hmm. But once I was back on my feet, the same school who knew like what had happened accepted me again.
Wow.
And accelerated program, took like 2 years, and I finished it. That showed me never to let anyone's opinions or ideas of you to stop you.
Yeah.
Because they might have their own problems or whatever, and you just need to try, even whatever they say, you need to try before you discourage yourself.
Yeah, you should send that person a picture of you and your scrubs at the hospital.
I sent her a picture of my diploma and license. Yeah,
seriously. So what kind of nurse are you?
I'm in pediatrics.
Okay.
So I work with kids.
In general or cardiology? Or
I do general right now. My goal is cardiology.
Yeah.
But I'm still not, I can say I'm not confident enough to like do, like, it's kind of like a double specialty.
Mm-hmm.
So I love what I do, but I will get there.
That's cool. I think, I guess one of the cool perspectives that you have is that you were a kid. So being diagnosed with any sort of health issue as a child isn't easy, whether it's a disease that you're going to live with for the rest of your life or whatever, just anything that's that could potentially, you know, just make you different from your friends. So how does that like help you? Like, you obviously have the medical expertise as, you know, a nurse, but you also have the patient expertise as someone that's lived with a heart disease your whole life and was diagnosed at a young age. So how do you think that helps you in what you do every day?
It's given me a lot more patience and my, like, as in patient with the patient's empathy, and just not, because sometimes the kids are very small, so they don't really understand. So teenagers, you know, I can kind of talk to them more. Sometimes I even tell them about myself if they're in that capacity to understand. Mm-hmm. But if they're young, like 5, 6 years old, it's really been helping the parents, because when they have a sick child, even it can be the smallest diagnosis, it can be like, you know, doesn't matter what it is, when their child is sick, they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't tell all my patients about my story, but when I feel like it's right and when it's going to help that parent or patient, I do tell them. And I've had parents become very emotional and just have so much hope when they see, you know, I'm 33. I forgot how old I was. I'm 33. I'm healthy. I'm doing well. And I'm now a nurse helping their child.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think it's a really cool perspective, because I've always said that, you know, as someone with, you know, was diagnosed with heart disease when I was 17, I had really great medical care. I had incredible nurses, incredible doctors that helped me through. but I never like connected with a person that was kind of going through something similar until I was a little older. So I think it's a really unique and really important perspective that you have is, again, you have your, you know, your expertise, which is, you know, all the, you know, those years of studying. And then you also have the experience, which I think is going to help a lot of people, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So a couple more questions and then we'll wrap up. If you were sitting across from somebody that was diagnosed with heart disease today and you could give them one piece of advice, what would it be?
To not let their diagnosis define them.
I love that.
And that's what I've told people since forever, even before all this happened, that, you know, I think part of the reason that I didn't really think, oh, it might be my heart whenever those two incidents happened is because, and this is, I mean, I guess it's bad, but it's also a good thing. But I grew up in a way that I didn't think anything was wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wrong. As in, I didn't think I was sick. I didn't think I had limitations. I had restrictions. Half the time, until the point that I like saw my scar in the mirror, I even forgot that I had heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I never let it define me at all. I wanted to do everything everyone else was doing. I wanted to, you know, join the swim team, the, you know, ballet, whatever. I wanted to go out with my friends. I drove, I went to school. So I think mm-hmm. all that just made me think, why would you let a diagnosis define you and stop you from doing all these things?
Awesome. Such a great, great way to look at it too. But again, another thing that I feel like I've talked to people about is that is what happens to a lot of people is they get diagnosed with heart disease or they go into cardiac arrest and survive and they let that define them as who they are. Obviously, it's a piece, right? It has an impact on your life, but it doesn't have to, you know, define your whole life. You touched on something that I want to talk about too. And I'm just curious, you know, you've had multiple open heart surgeries and I want to talk about like having scars. Because I have a zipper scar and I have other scars as well. And when I first had my open heart surgery, I was super self-conscious about it. Like I looked at myself because it was very fresh and I was like, oh my gosh, like this is what I'm going to look like for the rest of my life. And I just want to kind of get your thoughts on, you know, having a scar, being a female and you know, what advice would you give to, you know, another female or another patient that's self-conscious about having, you know, scars?
Personally, my scar is the last thing that's ever bothered me about myself physically. I think, if anything, it tells a story of survival. So it's nothing, you know, female or male, I think when you see your scar, it just shows how strong you are, how powerful you are, and that you're still here. And it's not something to, you know, and I understand, obviously, especially if you're maybe at a younger age or, you know, having other insecurities, but I think just telling yourself the opposite and being positive about it, that this scar saved my life and the scar is what shows my survival, then you'll have a better perspective and outlook on it.
That's awesome. All right. So how can people, because I know one of the things that we, you know, we follow each other on social media. So I know you are very open about, you know, your heart journey. And I think with that comes like you being a very good resource for other people that are going through similar things. So how can people find you and contact you if they want to connect with you to just chat about, you know, being a heart disease patient?
So my messages are always open. You said you can tag me. It's my name, Tamar_XX. They can message me there. I don't have any other social media, so Instagram would be the best way.
Okay.
And I answer all my messages. I hope I've helped many people, so I need anyone who wants to talk.
Yeah, definitely. So what I'll make sure we do is I'll make sure we link, you know, for those listening, we'll link it in the description for the podcast. For those watching on YouTube, we'll link it in the description of the YouTube channel so people have direct link to your Instagram page. So
perfect.
Is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you want to add? Anything that I forgot to ask?
Not that I can think of, but just like I said, my best message is to never let not just heart disease, but any kind of disease, diagnosis, medical disabilities, whatever you want to call it, define your life.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Tamar, for taking the time to do this. I think I've followed you now for a couple of years and I love reading your posts and hearing, you know, staying up to date on everything you're doing. And I know you're going to have a really cool impact and a really good impact on a lot of other people, whether it's through your Instagram page or whether it's through your career. So thank you for all the great work that you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to A Big Heart, a podcast about living with heart disease. If you liked this episode, it would mean so much to me if you could give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Like anything in life, the goal is to improve. Please provide any feedback you have, any topics you want to hear, or any guests that can provide value to our listeners. You can message us on Instagram at A Big Heart Podcast or send us an email at mike@inaheartbeat.org. To learn more about In a Heartbeat and the programs we provide, please visit www.inaheartbeat.org. That is www.inaheartbeat.org.